Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. In Tallahassee and Leon County, on any given day, there are some 800 homeless people. Some are physically and mentally ill. Some are down on their luck. Others are elderly or veterans. And many are children living in a state of insecurity or in tow with mothers. The epidemic of homeless women all over the world is correlated to the deeply rooted systematic discrimination women face everywhere. The mission of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition is to end homelessness in the Big Bend area through education, advocacy, and the provision of quality services. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome members of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition community. Jude Dugas. Jude is the home plate case manager, and I'm glad to have him.
Hello, Dr. Hollifield. Thank you for having me on the show today.
I appreciate you coming. Larry Simmons. Larry is the outreach specialist.
Yes. Hello, Dr. Hollifield. Glad to be here.
And Marie Vanderberg. She is the Hope Community Director.
Thank you so much for having us, Dr. Hollifield.
I appreciate you coming. I'd like you to just introduce us, make this Homeless 101, the Big Bend Homeless Coalition. I'd like to share the information with me and the listening audience. You know, there are some areas that we hear about, but we really don't know the dynamics and know what it involves. So I'd like to take this opportunity. If you would just share some information, tell us about the Big Bend Homeless Coalition. How did it evolve? You know, what does it look like?
Well,
and that's to all of you.
Okay.
Whomever. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, it was developed by Kay Freeman. She was the creator, and for probably several different reasons. Number one, her passion for serving individuals experiencing homelessness. Mm-hmm. And I also know one of the main reasons was that if your community did not have a coalition, you couldn't draw down federal dollars from HUD. So she was very interested in trying to infuse our community with federal dollars so we could start, the programs that you see today.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other comments that you all want to share?
Yes. Just recently, the United States involvement with the Iraqi war created a lot of veterans, and that's when the programs directly – servicing veterans came along because of the wars, mm-hmm. recent wars.
I see. Okay. I know basically, just for those who are listening, there are 805 is the number of homeless in our community easily any given day. 62% have some disabling condition. It may be physical, it may be medical, substance abuse, developmental disabilities, HIV, AIDS, and out of these, there's about 200 that are sleeping outside. Is that correct? That's what I had read. And I thought, let me check with you all. Is that correct?
Yes, it varies. It does. Mm-hmm. The point in time count that they do mm-hmm. every year. Mm-hmm. Certainly, they identify the number of sheltered and unsheltered. And it's surprising that a number that high of people mm-hmm. living out in the woods.
Yes, yeah. Well, who are the homeless?
Can I add this?
Yes, feel free
well,
at any point.
Well, one of the things that I do as the outreach specialist, I have to go where they are, to speak. We're in camps in wooded areas all throughout the county. We go in areas and it'll just stun you to see people living in tents. They're living on the ground. You know, they've made a life They've created their own cities.
How do they receive you? How do you make your entrance?
Well, I had to learn from others because mm-hmm. I'm new to this program. They tell us to be respectful and just walk up to the camps and address them. And we always have something with us. You know, we have what you call a breakfast club. We bring hot coffee, donuts. We have information about programs and services that they can receive. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we have blankets with us, like mm-hmm. during the cold season. We conduct blanket drives so we can take blankets with us and all kinds of foods.
Who are these people?
They're all colors and all ages and all genders. Yeah, really. Yes, they come in and you know, a small percentage of them are veterans, uh-huh. but it's more than likely most of them is just general public that uh-huh. That are homeless and that have made a life living in the woods.
Okay. And so often they are the individuals we see on the side of the road, at the street corner, on the edges of the parking lot, who beg for money, panhandle, or as we say, fly a sign. Uh-huh. Many of these individuals are the ones I work with in my program. My program is Permanent Supportive Housing, which is just, as the name implies, it's housing for individuals who've been in a state of homelessness for at least 1 year and who have a disabling condition.
Okay.
That can mean a physical disability, a mental disability, or a substance abuse problem.
Okay. All right.
You know, earlier you asked what do these folks look like? Mm-hmm. And I look around this table, and they look like us.
Oh, yes.
You know, I think people would be very surprised to see how people and families, I work specifically with families, how they enter homelessness. And
share some of that with the listening audience because, you know, that's what this is mm-hmm. about. This mm-hmm. is about sharing information, mm-hmm. you know, so that individuals will have a better insight into the dynamics and exactly what's going on
sure.
with the homeless population.
Well, one of the things that we value very much is educating the public, because I think the more people understand what homelessness is, the more concerned they're going to be about this and the less afraid they might be. But at any rate, I can give you several examples. We've had the majority of our families are female-headed households. We do have a handful of dads, and then we have a handful of both mom and dad. But usually it involves somebody who has gotten sick, they don't have insurance, they couldn't get treated, or it took longer, they lost their job. Now they can't pay the rent. So what they have to do is if they don't have a support system where they might be able to go live with mom or dad or brother or sister, if they have nowhere to go, they may end up at Hope Community. And a lot of people don't realize this, but when you sign a lease, usually there's a clause in there saying that you can't have – that only people who are on this lease can live in that apartment.
Right.
So they may have family. They may have friends who are willing, but if they violate their lease,
they'll be in jeopardy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we have people who get sick and lose their job or lose their job for other reasons. And again, the same scenario. You end up not being able to pay your rent, your utilities, and you get evicted. There are some folks who struggle with possibly mental illness. I think, Jude, you were talking about this earlier.
Yes.
Mental illness, physical illness, substance abuse, and struggle to hang on to a job or maybe find it very difficult to become employed, and they end up homeless.
What is the process for, accessing the various programs that you have? We'll take a break shortly, but after that, we'll look at the program. But for someone who's listening and they think, wow, I might be able to benefit from some of that or might know someone or refer someone, what is the process? I mean, where does one go? I'm homeless.
To the shelter, to the Kearney Center,
okay,
located on Municipal. That typically where It's the starting point.
Okay. That's what
determine.
I want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Are you a veteran? Have you experienced chronic homelessness? And then they can start to work with your specific situation based on your needs and your case.
Okay.
And also, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, with the veterans, we do have a line where interested veterans who want to come off the ground out of the woods, we do have a number, and I don't mind sharing that because we have publication that we put out all the time. Okay. The number where you can reach our office is 850-792-9414. And you just call us. If you're a veteran, we're gonna do a screening with you. And then we look at that screen, then we'll get back with you and we'll do an intake with you. And we'll come to wherever you are. If you're in the woods, we will come to the woods.
Okay.
And we will find you and do an intake or whatever with you and try to get you out of that situation.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And what Jude was talking about earlier, the Kearney Center serves the unaccompanied adult men and women, so basically single men and women with no children. For Hope Community, they can come directly to Hope, or they can give – it's probably best to call ahead the number.
Oh, that's just what I was going to say. Share that with us, please.
850-597-4259. And that just gives our staff a chance to, you know, to be on the lookout for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there any particular hours that they need to call or how
right
does that work?
Right now, it's 24/7. We have had folks show up in the middle of the night. You know, unfortunately, some women may leave a domestic violence situation in the middle of the night. And if the refuge house is full, they will come to us. So we are staffed to be able to do a very short intake because really in the middle of the night with kids, you want to get them in
sleeping. You just want to get settled.
Yeah, you want to get them settled.
Mm-hmm.
So, but other than that, there's no requirement. We're what you call a low barrier program. So really the only thing that will exclude a family from Hope is if there is an adult who is identified as a sexual offender. For obvious reasons, they would not be able to, you know, come to Hope. But other than that, we just do a short intake, try to orient them, get them the basic needs. We have Trinity United Methodist who keeps us stockpiled in teddy bears and stuffed animals.
You're tuned into 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me, I have members of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition. I welcome again Marie Vandenberg, Larry Simmons, and Jude Dugas. Did you know that Florida has the third highest homeless population of any state in the nation, with 33,559 people living in homelessness. This includes 2,900 veterans and 6,100 plus children. Just a little information there. Maria, you may continue. I had to interrupt you before we went on break. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's quite all right. I was just trying to kind of explain when somebody comes there, one of the main things is we want them to feel comfortable. Homelessness is very traumatic, and we just want to be extremely respectful and let them know what's going to happen, because that's always important. People have a fear of the unknown, so kind of what can they expect?
Would you describe just the physical, you know, facility, just so people have a feel for what it's like? Now, these are individuals who are families that you are dealing with.
Correct.
So they're families, so do you try to keep the family unit together? How does that work? I mean, are children removed? Just share with us, please.
Sure, sure. Well, right now, we have 167 beds, and we are serving, a couple of weeks ago, we were serving 241 people. So you all can do the math. Obviously, right. We're serving more than we have beds for. Some of those are our infants can sleep in pack and plays.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we have that. We also have cots that we put up in our cafe. And unfortunately, that's right now, if you were to come to Hope, that would be your first stop. And from there, as quickly as we can, we try to move folks into one of our three dorms. And we have quite a few private rooms, but those private rooms are really reserved for dads mm-hmm. and their children mm-hmm. because we can't mix adult males and adult females in an open area like our women's wing.
Okay.
They're also reserved for people who have disabilities. For instance, if you have a child with autism, they are not going to do well in an open cafe mm-hmm. with 30 people. So we try to make decisions as best we can to get folks in mm-hmm. in a room if they are experiencing some kind of a disability.
Now, how long will they stay? What's the process?
Well, it really varies. Mm-hmm. We have some people who stay just a couple of days and just enough to kind of pull together some money, find an apartment, and move out. We also have a handful of families who have been there for over a year, close to a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And it really depends on their situation. We treat each family as an individual. I would say the average length of stay right now is 3 to 4 months. We certainly are trying to reduce that, and we really strive to move families back into stable housing as soon as possible because it's healthier, mm-hmm. they're happier, mm-hmm. It's less traumatic for the children.
And this is open to all of you. Okay. As far as support services that they can get when they're in your programs, what are they? I'll start with you because I know you deal with the veterans, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What's that process?
Well,
like?
our program, we have a team of people in various backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
We have the intake specialist that also does the computer information, inserting information and data into our systems. We have case managers. All of them are master-level social workers. Mm-hmm. We have a housing specialist that work with the veteran and with landlords to kind of smooth over and transition our veterans. Then we have a peer specialist who work directly with the veterans, basically hold them by their hands and make sure they're working with the case managers, making sure they get everything they need when they move into into housing. And, of course, the outreach coordinator or specialist is out educating the community, finding veterans and just getting information out in the community.
That's you. Am I right?
I'm a case manager. With the permanent supportive
with
housing.
With the permanent supportive housing. Okay.
And the services that I'm able to hook my clients up
mm-hmm.
with are things like food banks, medical care, things of that nature. I have one client. She's authorized me to get her medication for her because it's difficult. Mm-hmm. My clients do not have automobiles.
And I'm glad you said that because people don't think about, when you say homeless,
right.
the barriers and the challenges
right.
that they face. So thanks for saying that.
I get them bus passes. I mm-hmm. take them by okay. the Kearney Center once a month because as their case manager, I can give them an application and they can get a 30-day bus pass.
Okay.
So that at least mm-hmm. allows them to have
that
access.
That could be very helpful.
Yes. They have access to transportation. I take them to food banks on a regular basis. I'm becoming very familiar with the food pantries around town, some of which can be visited once a week, some of them once a month.
Mm-hmm.
For example, this morning I took two of them to one of the once-a-month food banks here in town. That's very helpful for them. Basically, the goal of what I do is to keep them in a state of housing.
Okay.
people don't seem to understand. It's not as easy as here's the key to your apartment. Good luck.
Right.
When an individual has been living in the woods for years, they've learned to survive in that environment, and they can be almost ambivalent about being housed. Say, this could go either way. And it's my job to help them remain in a state of housing, to help them reacclimate to society.
How do they receive you? And the reason I ask this is because I have seen or heard, it's been reported, you know, that lots of times the homeless may not want to go to homeless facilities or homeless shelters.
That's right.
They think they're better off staying where they are. So that's why I ask this of you all.
Well, it's difficult for some individuals to want to go to the shelter as they suffer from what is known as post-traumatic stress disorder, and going to a place that's crowded and a little loud, like the shelter, is pretty much the last thing they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And we hear that all the time with the veterans. You know, if you've experienced war, you don't want to be around any noise, any you know, any rowdy people. It kind of puts them in a bad situation that can cause some problems. So they don't want most of them don't want any part of the shelter. They'd rather be in the woods where it's peaceful. They don't have to deal with other people and bureaucracy as well. They don't. Many of them don't like
that's
that
understandable.
Either.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and so,
go on. I'll get to you, Marie, in a second.
And so often with my clients, they do suffer from PTSD, and it's not of a military-related nature. Usually it stems from what happened to them when they were a child. That's the real common theme that seems to run among my clients is severe child abuse, which sets them up for problems later in life. As Marie stated, problems that would keep them from being able to get a job. Yes, maintain an income and maintain a residence. It's very difficult.
Now, as far as resources that are available, can they access any type of ongoing counseling or therapy? Because it sounds like a lot of them would really certainly benefit from
yes.
it. And I know veterans have an avenue, I guess.
Oh, yeah. The whole population has access to all types of services and benefits. And that's why I love the fact that we have so many social workers. In fact, I'm a social worker. I'm a bachelor's level social worker. But all of our case managers on our team, they're master level. So they're really good at accessing, services and things that resources that are out there for our clients.
Okay.
Well, the veterans I work with in my program typically have a discharge status of other than honorable, which completely prohibits them from getting any help whatsoever from the Veterans Administration.
And
yes.
So they aren't eligible for anything.
That's correct. They were in the military. They are veterans, and they get nothing from the VA. And that's why they're in my program as opposed to receiving rental assistance from the VA.
Mm-hmm. I see. Wow. Well, that's admirable of your program. I mean, it's good to have that option because you're saying, you know, because of their status and the way that they were discharged, they lost any type of eligibility that they would have, you know, benefited from is what I hear you saying.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Marie, I know you had some comments earlier that you had wanted to add.
Well, I think, families are a little bit different than single men and women.
Yeah.
You will find some families in the woods, but not near the numbers that Larry and Judah were talking about. They are putting their kids first, and they realize that they have to get to a safe place. So we will see them come more to Hope Community. And while they may not like all the rules, and unfortunately when you have community living, there have to be rules.
Right.
They struggle with that.
Share some of the rules, if you don't mind.
Well, one of the rules that we struggle with the most is we ask the parents to have eyes on their children at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And The good news is they feel comfortable at Hope, and they might stay in the dorm and send their child out to the playground. And it's and I'm glad that they feel comfortable.
That's true.
But on the other hand,
that's not acceptable.
Yeah, we just don't have enough staff to monitor the children, and so that tends to be one of the things that we are constantly struggling with. You know, some other rules. You can't just bring anybody on our campus.
Okay.
And while we say, yeah, this is your temporary home, you can't bring friends or family on our campus because we haven't vetted them. We don't know who they are, and your children's safety is always first for us.
Mm-hmm.
Chores. Who likes to do chores? I struggle with this with my teenager. You know, that's we don't have it in the budget to hire janitorial services. So, you know, it's like a family at home. I'm sure all of us have to pitch in, and
that's
everybody has a job.
And that's why I asked you to share.
Yeah.
You know, so the listening audience would have an idea of when you say rules, what kind of rules are you talking about, you know? And that's all of that makes good sense.
Sure.
I mean, you know, so you have to have it that way, okay? I know also you have what they call a rapid rehousing program.
Mm-hmm.
And what does – I wanted to know if you would share that with us and review it and tell us what is rapid rehousing? What does that involve?
The way I understand it, it's for individuals who are in a state of homelessness, but they're receiving a monthly income. They could be employed. They may be getting disability, but they need assistance getting back into housing to clear the initial hurdle of getting into an apartment. The security deposit, the first month rent.
Okay, I see what you mean. Mm-hmm.
Yes, because it's a rather large outlay of funds.
Right, to get into that. Okay.
Yes. So rapid rehousing gets them over that hurdle, and then the individual takes up the rent payments for themselves with their income.
So they have – so to paraphrase what you're saying, we're talking about families who may be self-sufficient once they got that apartment, you know, the debt deposit for the apartment, and maybe got the utilities turned on. Because that is a chunk.
That's right.
That's a chunk, okay? And once they had that, then they're able to maintain.
Yes.
Okay. And with rapid rehousing, I guess that's open to everyone. Is that veterans, families?
Well, in our program is called Housing Homeless Prevention.
Okay.
It's the same word, but it's different. Same thing. It's really the same thing. Homeless prevention.
Just got a different name.
If you're living in a home and situations, sickness or whatever come up, and you may not be able to pay your rent or utilities, we have a program where if us helping you will prevent you from becoming homeless, We will step in and provide some funding to keep you from becoming homeless.
Right, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I would think that'd be very beneficial. Yeah,
and I know that Larry's program has a separate federal funding stream. So for Jude and I, when Jude dealing with individuals and myself dealing with families, the homeless prevention are for folks who are in their home. They're not homeless yet, but they are getting an eviction notice. So what we're going to try to do is prevent homelessness.
Okay.
The rapid rehousing is really for people who are currently homeless.
Okay.
And they have – every community has their criterion, but basically I think it's a $900 income that they're looking at, something reasonable that this can be sustained. So you're homeless, but you got a job, you're making this much money, we're going to take some funds and move you in so that you can end your homeless rapidly.
Okay. Yeah, so that makes sense.
The problem is the need – is so much greater than the actual resources that we have in these programs.
Well, and that leads me into just where do you get your funds? How much money do you have? And people who are listening, let's say they want to volunteer or donate. You know, often that comes when you hear about a program and you think, wow, I'd like to do more. How? Share the numbers and where they would, how they need to contact you or who they need to contact if they want to have a donation, volunteer. And when we come back, we'll talk about the different areas that you do have that are available to volunteer in. I would guess that you have different areas, right?
Yes, okay. We do.
All right. If you, yeah, go right ahead. Share it. No.
Okay. I was trying to look up the number. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be different for each of our programs.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. That's what, right.
Hope, we have about an $800,000 budget.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a lot of money, but...
No, it doesn't.
Well, to me, but in looking at the budget and what we, just our needs,
mm-hmm.
You know, anything from buying diapers to making sure our fire alarm system is working, to the number of mattresses we have to go through, to just wear and tear on the building. You know, we 60% of our population that we serve are minor children. And for any of you who have had children, you know mm-hmm. how hard they can be on furniture.
Yes.
You know, kind of constantly looking at the way the dorms are set up, they have like a common area, like a living room.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right now we're looking at trying to refurbish the living room furniture.
Mm.
So it's just all kinds of things that we can use. Donations that we typically can accept are things that we can get rid of fairly quickly, like we can pass on immediately to our residents.
We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield. And joining me, I have members of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition community. Again, I'm welcoming Marie Vanderberg. She is Hope Community Director. Larry Simmons, he is the Outreach Specialist. And Jude Dugas, he is a Home Plate Case Manager. Before we went on break, we were just talking about donations and how to contact the various programs. I'll go back to you, Marie, and I won't interrupt you this time.
Perfectly okay. Sarah Jean Hargis is our fabulous volunteer coordinator, and she also manages our donations. I can give you a number.
Sure, please
do. 850-792-9426. And like I was saying earlier, there are all kinds of donations that each one of our programs can accept. Hope really does tend to focus on items that we can quickly pass on, like regular size shampoo and lotion. We do get a lot of the, you know, the hotel mm-hmm. shampoos. But if you are a mom with five kids trying to manage with a, you know, several
it's
of those little,
do it.
It's not going to do it.
Uh-huh.
So towels, sheets, blankets. We are in desperate need of mattresses right now, but those are things we cannot accept, gently used mattresses.
Okay.
You can go on our website, and we have a list of things that can be donated. Again, Sarah Jean, also, we seek at Hope Community more group volunteers. It's real hard to manage individual volunteers, although we do have some specific areas where that would be welcome.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of interns at Hope, and we really appreciate our FAMU and FSU and Thomas University interns. So she's the person to call for
okay.
something like that.
All right. Dude.
For my program, the phone number to call is 850-339-6361.
Okay.
That's my work cell phone number. And my program accepts donations of laundry detergent, dish soap, things of that nature, household items, those things that cannot be purchased with food stamps.
Okay.
This was an education for me when I took this job, the things that can't be bought with food stamps. hygiene items. Those are very popular too. Toothpaste, deodorant, toothbrushes.
You can't buy food. You buy those with food stamps.
No, you cannot. Absolutely not. No. And that makes those items very popular for my clients.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my clients are zero income. They're getting by on $194 of food stamps every month, and that's it. So they need things like toilet paper, hygiene items, cleaning supplies, things of that nature.
How can somebody make it with $194?
$194 is the maximum allotment for a single individual with zero income.
And what is they supposed to do with that?
They are supposed to make do as the best they can, which is why I also take my clients to food banks, the food pantries around town to help supplement that.
Okay. All right.
I also take donations of household items, pots, pans, plates, bowls, cups, silverware, things of that nature. When I house an individual, they're either coming from the woods or they're coming from the shelter, and they have nothing.
Okay.
And so I try to come up with as much of that as possible for them to have. Once I put them in an apartment, I then give them, hey, here's some household items for you to help with that transition.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that that's very, really beneficial, and they really appreciate it.
It is.
And those are items that are expensive.
Yes, they
can be. And they can't buy them.
That's right. Well, I had one individual the day I took the agency van, drove to the shelter, had her apartment all lined up, and was going to move her into her apartment. And she picked up her purse and said, let's go. And I said, don't you want to get your stuff, your clothing, any personal items? No, all that was stolen. What I'm wearing is what I have.
Oh.
Yes.
So you're starting from zero.
Yes. Now, I already had pots, pans, silverware, that for her. But I didn't know that she
didn't have any clothes.
You're right. Nothing. So I was able to come up with some donations of clothing for her.
Okay.
Well, our office is at another location, and we're not really structured for receiving donations, but we receive them, you know, anyway. But most of the time, we get donations people wanting to donate around the winter season when they think about our veterans or just homeless people in general out there in the cold weather, you know.
Indeed.
So we normally get coats and blankets and all of that stuff during the winter seasons. But we just about get an assortment of all these things, and we end up maybe passing it on to to Jude or some other agency that can use it. So, but, you know. People find us.
They have no problem
finding us. But winter season, man, we get so many donations of coats and blankets and socks and stuff like that for the homeless veterans.
I would think with you, Marie, and you, Larry, you all are in the community. Not that you aren't, but let me just tell you what I'm getting to. You have specifically identified facilities within the community. How does the community respond to you? I mean, are they receptive? You know, sometimes you read about communities and they don't want, you know, whatever home in their vicinity. And I'm just wondering how they are. I would think with you, Jude, it might be a little different because you're going kind of all over.
Yes.
And they're in different apartments and it's not identified. But with the veterans, it's identified. This is a veterans facility, you know, and with you, it's the hope. So do you find that the community is receptive and open?
You know, I'll be honest with you. Hope started back in 2005. I don't know that the community even knew we were over there.
Well, that's
keeping, you know, flying under the radar is kind of a good thing.
That's a good thing.
And especially now, I don't like to give out our address because we are serving you know, a population that maybe can't be served by the refuge house because they're full. So, you know, we're not advertising that.
Right.
You know, like I said, I didn't know when I first started working there. I had no idea that Hope Community was over there.
Okay.
So that's the kind of way we like that.
That's
good. It means we're good neighbors.
And they they don't know.
They don't know.
And that doesn't matter.
Exactly. Exactly.
I And what about you?
Well, with us being the outreach specialists, in recent years we've expanded our outreach efforts in the outlying counties, Gaston mm-hmm. County, Taylor County, Madison, Monticello, mm-hmm. and all of those things. And what we do, we have cards, we have refrigerator magnets, we have the little keychains with our information on how to contact us if you wanted information about to be housed. And that's part of my job.
I may
attend some type of community event at Florida State, FAMU, or just in our neighborhood. And I set up a table, give out those items, and we even have access to emergency food bags to where when we set up our table, we don't just have a bunch of gimmicks to give them, mm-hmm. but we also food to give to some of our homeless veterans. So I think the word is getting out. I mean, we have these kind of white bags, and we just fill them up with food and the different little gadgets that we normally have. Mm-hmm. So people, I think, are beginning to receive us more in the community because That's of good. Our efforts in the community.
That's good. What was I going to ask you? One of your what are the activities that volunteers can engage in? Are you receptive to individuals doing volunteer? Yes, I see. I'll start with you. I know where to start. He's like, I got plenty of things for you to do. Yes, go ahead.
With my program, my office is located at an apartment complex in town that's owned by the Homeless Coalition.
Okay.
That's used for supportive housing. And one of the apartments is my office, and another one of the offices is the supply room. And we have a volunteer who goes and helps organize, takes what could be a loose collection of mm-hmm. household items and organizes them.
Okay. So there's plenty of work for
yes.
you.
Yes. Okay. She was in my office this week, in fact, just helping organize the food, the plates here, the cups
donations
over there.
That come
yes.
in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
We have some of the same needs. We have very little storage, so we are mm-hmm. We really value people who want to donate to us, and we do ask that they call us ahead of time because sometimes they'll bring stuff by that we really can't accept. So I just wanted to mention that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, just some of the things, we have a wonderful special ed teacher, Ms. Vaca, who the Leon County School provides to us in the afternoons, Monday through Friday, to tutor our children. And we are just, we're looking for volunteers who can maybe help her, assist her in the Children's Learning Center. We have something called we call bedtime stories.
Okay.
It's people who come in and read to kids at night. A couple of reasons why: to try to calm the kids down. It can be very chaotic at Hope, and also just to model for our parents the importance of reading to your children. Mm-hmm. We have lots and lots of donated books, and I'm constantly giving those out to the kids and encouraging reading. Another huge volunteer program we have is our meal volunteer program, where we have groups, faith-based groups, civic groups who come in and either cook and serve or maybe just cater, bring in from one of the mm-hmm. local restaurants, gives our staff in the kitchen a little time to do other things. Maybe some office assistants.
What do the adults in your program do during the day? I mean, how is it structured? Are there groups that they attend, employment classes? I mean, just what is involved there?
Well, that's an excellent question. We, as case managers, and we have four wonderful case managers, we don't actually provide services. Mm-hmm. We seek the services out and make the referrals. Because of our limited space, we really can't do groups, but we work with CareerSource. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're the experts in, employment. They're the employment specialists.
Okay.
So, we don't want to recreate things that other
That's
agencies.
Right.
Exactly.
You have to make
so
the
you
will.
Want to send them to the experts.
Mm-hmm.
Parenting groups, we work with Boys Town. we want to get folks in different programs that, you know, where their needs are. Again, parenting is a big thing. I think we can all use help with, you know, how to be a good parent. Employment, we do have some folks who have some mental health issues. Mm-hmm. We have some folks who have substance abuse issues. So we're going to, you know, make the necessary referrals there. So that's how our – and the other thing is between the hours of 9 and 2:30, we ask all of our adults to be off campus.
Okay.
Because, first of all, that's the time your kids are in childcare or school. Oh. So when you need to look for a job,
that's
a prime time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also important for people to be off that campus. To be on that campus 24/7 is not healthy. You need to get out. You need to get involved. And that's kind of what we're trying to do.
Okay. So what I really hear you talking about, what you were reading my mind, is I wanted to hear how you network and you coordinate it with other agencies and facilities in the area. And you've shared how you may. But I would like to hear from you, Larry, and you do just how you may interface with some of the other agencies, whomever.
Well, with me, especially with outreach, we don't necessarily go out and create events or outreach activities ourselves. Most of the time what we do is piggyback. You know, we may get an email from Leon County Sheriff's Office that the jailhouse may be having a reentry workshop where they have inmates who will be getting out of jail pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And the sheriff is doing a wonderful job by giving these young young men and ladies a chance to hear about different programs you're getting ready to go back into the community. Mm-hmm. You need to be prepared. Mm-hmm. So a lot of different agencies will be there. Community events. I mean, you know, this time of the year, Florida State's having events. Different groups are having events. If I know about it, I'm going to sign up and be there and represent our organization.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In terms of other agencies?
Or just networking that you do.
Hmm.
You know, for example, I know, and I'll tell you what I'm leaning toward. I know that you work with, well, some of you may work with CCYS, because we're talking about homelessness. And with that population, you know, that's what it's about. They're, mm-hmm. you know, they're kids who are without a home. And so that's what I meant when I'm saying, you know, how you network or who you may, interact with.
Usually churches.
Okay.
Because they host farm share events and food banks. With my clients, they tend to be concerned with basic survival needs. Then that really does fill up a lot of their time during the day, trying to get enough food, seeking utility assistance from some of the other agencies that offer that, things of that nature,
okay,
just helping them to survive. And then medical appointments and health concerns are another big one for my clients. Mm-hmm. And I will take sometimes if they need a ride to an appointment, I will take them to one to make sure they get there and they get the care they need.
Okay.
And you mentioned CCYS. Mm-hmm. They have what you call a breakfast club. When I first came on with the agency, I thought, you know, a bunch of professionals would be sitting around eating breakfast early in the morning talking about helping, you know, homeless population. When I found out, we was in the woods. It was a rude awakening for me until I came with this agency. You know, I did very little work actually working with the homeless population as a social worker. But when I found out we was in the woods, which doesn't bother me because I'm ex-military myself. I spent 6 years in the Army National Guard. So being a social worker.
You're very comfortable with that.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable with being in those environments. But, yeah, we go out with CCYS.
Okay.
On Fridays, we get up about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And we go out all throughout the city, downtown areas. We go in the wooded areas. And you'll be amazed that, you know, we run into people in Walmart, you know, parking lots, who are sleeping in cars, just everywhere. Yeah.
Well, I applaud you. I tell you, we are out of time, but I want to let you know how much we appreciate you for coming in. You've been tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. I've been talking with Jude Dugas, Larry Simmons, and Marie Vanderburg. I want you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.